his neck a confusion of loose flesh and old ropey muscle. His eyes had permanent bags under them now. His coffee-colored skin didn't show many wrinkles, but it had a tinge of gray to it. But the smile he gave Holden was genuine, and he came around the desk to shake his hand and guide him to a chair.
"I read your report on Ganymede," Fred said. "Talk to me about it. Impressions on the ground."
"Fred," Holden said, "there's something else." Fred nodded to him as he moved back around his desk and sat down.
"Go on."
Holden started to speak, then stopped. Fred was staring at him. His expression hadn't changed, but his eyes were sharper, more focused. Holden felt a sudden and irrational fear that Fred already knew everything he was about to say. The truth was, Holden had always been afraid of Fred. There was a duality to the man that left him on edge. Fred had reached out to the crew of the Rocinante at the exact moment they'd needed help the most. He'd become their patron, their safe harbor against the myriad enemies they'd gathered over the last year. And yet, Holden couldn't forget that this was still Colonel Frederick Lucius Johnson, the butcher of Anderson Station. A man who had spent the last decade helping to organize and run the Outer Planets Alliance, an organization that was capable of murder and terrorism to further its goals. Fred had almost certainly ordered some of those murders personally. It was entirely possible that the OPA leader version of Fred had killed more people than even the United Nations Marine Colonel version of Fred had. Would he really balk at using the protomolecule to further his agenda? Maybe. Maybe that would be going too far. And he'd been a friend, and he deserved the chance to defend himself. "Fred, I..." Holden started, then stopped. Fred nodded again, the smile slipping off his face and being replaced by a slight frown.
"I'm not going to like this." It was a statement of fact.
Holden grabbed the arms of the office chair and pushed himself to his feet. He shoved more violently than he wanted to, and in the low 0.3G of station spin, flew off his feet for a second. Fred chuckled, and the frown shifted back into a grin. And that was it. The grin and the laugh broke the fear, and turned it into anger. When Holden settled back to his feet, he leaned forward and slammed both palms onto Fred's desk. "You," he said, "don't get to laugh. Not until I know for sure it wasn't all your fault. If you can do what I think you might have done and still laugh, I will shoot you right here and now." Fred's smile didn't change, but something in his eyes did. He wasn't used to being threatened, but it wasn't new territory either.
"What I might have done," Fred said, not turning it into a question, just repeating it back. "It's the protomolecule, Fred. That's what's happening on Ganymede. A lab with kids as experiments and that black webbing shit and a monster that almost killed my ship. That's my fucking impression on the ground. Someone has been playing with the bug and it might be loose and the inner planets are shooting each other to shit in orbit around it."
"You think I did this?" Fred said. Again, just a flat statement of fact.
"We threw this shit into Venus," Holden yelled. "I gave you the only sample. And suddenly Ganymede, breadbasket of your future empire, the one place the inner navies won't cede control of, gets a fucking outbreak?"
Fred let the silence answer for a beat.
"Are you asking me if I'm using the protomolecule to drive the inner planet's troops off Ganymede and strengthen my control of the outer planets?"
Fred's quiet tone made Holden realize how loud he'd gotten, and he took a moment to take several deep breaths. When his pulse had slowed a bit, he said, "Yes, pretty much exactly that."
"You,"
Fred said with a broad smile that did not extend to his eyes,
"do not get to ask me that."
"What?"
"In case you've forgotten, you are an employee of this organization."
Fred stood up, stretching to his full height, a dozen centimeters taller than Holden. His smile didn't change, but his body shifted and sort of spread out. Suddenly, he looked very large. Holden took a step back before he could stop himself.
I, Fred continued, owe you nothing but the terms of our latest contract. Have you completely lost your mind, boy? Charging in here, shouting at me, demanding answers? No one else could have...
Holden started, but Fred ignored him.
You gave me the only sample we knew of, but you assume that if you don't know about it, it doesn't exist. I've been putting up with your bullshit for over a year now, Fred said. This idea you have that the universe owes you answers, this righteous indignation you wield like a club at everyone around you, but I don't have to put up with your shit. Do you know why that is?
Holden shook his head, afraid if he spoke it might come out as a squeak.
It's because, Fred said, I'm the fucking boss. I run this outfit. You've been pretty useful, and you might be again in the future, but I have enough shit to deal with right now without you starting another of your crusades at my expense.
So, Holden said, letting the word drag to two syllables,
so you're fired. This was your last contract with me. I'll finish fixing the Rossi, and I'll pay you, because I don't break a deal. But I think we've finally built enough ships to start policing our own sky without your help, and even if we haven't, I'm just about done with you.
Fired, Holden said. Now get the hell out of my office before I decide to take the Rossi, too. She's got more Tyco parts on her now than originals. I think I might be able to make a good argument I own that ship.
Holden backed up toward the door, wondering how serious that threat might actually be.
Fred watched him go, but didn't move. When he reached the door, Fred said,
It wasn't me.
Their gazes met for a long, breathless moment.
It wasn't me, Fred repeated.
Holden said,
Okay,
and backed out the door. When the door slid shut and blocked Fred from view, Holden let out a long sigh and collapsed against the corridor wall. Fred was right about one thing. He'd been excusing himself with his fear for far too long. This righteous indignation you wield like a club at everyone around you. He'd seen humanity almost end due to his own stupidity. It had left him shaken to the core. He'd been running on fear and adrenaline ever since Eros. But it wasn't an excuse. Not anymore. He started to pull out his terminal to call Naomi when it hit him like a light turning on. I'm fired. He'd been on an exclusive contract with Fred for over a year. Tycho Station was their home base. Sam had spent almost as much time tuning and patching the Rossi as Amos had. That was all gone. They'd have to find their own jobs, find their own ports, buy their own repairs. No more patron to hold his hand. For the first time in a very long time, Holden was a real independent captain. He'd need to earn his way by keeping the ship in the air and the crew fed. He paused for a moment, letting that sink in. It felt great.
Chapter 33. Prax.
Amos sat forward in his chair. The sheer physical mass of the man made the room seem smaller, and the smell of alcohol and old smoke came off him like heat from a fire. His expression couldn't have been more gentle.
I don't know what to do, Prax said. I just don't know what to do. This is all my fault. Nicola was just... She was so lost and so angry. Every day I woke up and I looked over at her and all I saw was how trapped she was. And I knew May was going to grow up with that. With trying to get her mommy to love her when all Nikki wanted to do was be somewhere else.
and I thought it would be better. When she started talking about going, I was ready for her to do it, you know? And when I had to tell May that... Prax dropped his head into his hands, rocking slowly back and forth.
You gonna sick up again, Doc?
No, I'm fine. If I'd been a better father to her, she'd still be here.
We talking about the ex-wife or the kid?
I don't care about Nicola. If I'd been there for May, if I'd gone to her as soon as we got the warning, if I hadn't waited there in the dome, and for what? Plants? They're dead now anyway. I had one, but I lost it too. I couldn't even save one. But I could have gotten there, found her, if I'd...
You know she was gone before the shit hit the fan, right?
Prax shook his head. He wasn't about to let reality forgive him. And this, I had a chance. I got out. I got some money. And I was stupid. It was her last chance, and I was stupid about it.
Yeah, well, you're new at this, Doc.
She should have had a better dad. She deserved a better dad. She was such a good girl. For the first time, Amos touched him. The wide hand took his shoulder, gripping him from collarbone to scapula and bending Prax's spine until it was straight. Amos's eyes were more than bloodshot. White sclera marbled with red. His breath was hot and astringent. The platonic ideal of a sailor on a shore-leave bender. But his voice was sober and steady.
She's got a fine daddy, Doc. You give a shit. And that's more than a lot of people ever do.
Prax swallowed. He was tired. He was tired of being strong, of being hopeful and determined and preparing for the worst. He didn't want to be himself anymore. He didn't want to be anyone at all. Amos's hand felt like a ship clamp, keeping Prax from spinning away into darkness. All he wanted was to be let go. She's gone, Prax said. It felt like a good excuse, an explanation. They took her away from me, and I don't know who they are, and I can't get her back. And I don't understand.
It ain't over yet.
Prax nodded, not because he was actually comforted, but because this was the moment when he knew he should act like he was. I'm never going to find her.
You're wrong.
The door chimed and slid open. Holden stepped in. Prax couldn't see at first what was different about him, but that something had happened, had changed, was unmistakable. The face was the same. The clothes hadn't changed. Prax had the uncanny memory of sitting through a lecture on metamorphosis.
Hey, Holden said. Everything all right?
Little bumpy, Amos said.
Prax saw his own confusion mirrored in Amos's face. They were both aware of the transformation, and neither of them knew what it was.
You get laid or something, Cap?
No, Holden said.
I mean, good on you if you did, Amos said.
It just wasn't how I pictured.
I didn't get laid, Holden said hesitantly. The smile that came after was almost radiant. I got fired.
Just you got fired or all of us?
All of us.
Huh,
Amos said. He went still for a moment, then shrugged.
All right.
I need to talk to Naomi, but she's not accepting connections from me. Do you think you could track her down?
Discomfort pursed Amos's lips like he'd sucked in an old lemon.
I'm not going to pick a fight, Holden said. We just didn't leave it in the right place. And it's my fault, so I need to fix it.
I know she was hanging out down in that one bar Sam told us about last time, the Blauer Bloom. But you make a dick of yourself, and I'm not the one that told you.
Not a problem, Holden said. Thanks.
The captain turned to leave and then stopped in the doorway. He looked like someone still half in a dream.
What's bumpy? He asked.
You said it was bumpy. The doc was looking to hire on some Luna private security squad to track the kid down. Didn't work out, and he kind of took it bad.
Holden frowned. Prax felt the heat of a blush pushing up his neck.
I thought we were finding the kid, Holden said. He sounded genuinely confused.
Doc wasn't clear on that.
Oh, Holden said. He turned to Prax. We're finding your kid. You don't need to get someone else.
I can't pay you, Prax said.
All my accounts were on the Ganymede system, and even if they're still there, I can't access them. I just have what people are giving me. I can probably get something like $1,000 UN, is that enough?
No, Holden said. That won't buy a week's air, much less water. We'll have to take care of that.
Holden tilted his head like he was listening to something only he could hear.
I've already talked to my ex-wife, Prax said, and my parents. I can't think of anyone else.
How about everyone? Holden said.
I'm James Holden, the captain said from the huge screen of the Rosinante's pilot capsule, and I'm here to ask for your help. 4 months ago, hours before the first attack on Ganymede, a little girl with a life-threatening genetic illness was abducted from her daycare. In the chaos that...
Alex stopped the playback.
Prax tried to sit up, but the gimbaled co-pilot's chair only shifted under him and he lay back.
I don't know, Alex said from the pilot's couch. The green background kind of makes him look pasty, don't you think?
Prax narrowed his eyes a degree, considered, then nodded.
It's not really his color, Prax said. Maybe if it was darker.
I'll try that, the pilot said, tapping at his screen. Normally it's Naomi who does this stuff. Communications packages ain't exactly my first love, but we'll get it done. How about this?
Better, Prax said.
I'm James Holden, and I'm here to ask for your help. 4 months ago...
Holden's part of the little presentation was less than a minute, speaking into the camera from Amos's hand terminal. After that, Amos and Prax had spent an hour trying to create the rest. Alex had been the one to suggest using the better equipment on the Rosinante. Once they'd done that, putting together the information had been easy. He'd taken the start he'd made for Nicola and his parents as the template. Alex helped him record the rest. An explanation of May's condition, the security footage of Strickland and the mysterious woman taking her from the daycare, the data from the secret lab, complete with images of the protomolecule filament, pictures of May playing in the parks, and a short video from her second birthday party when she smeared cake frosting on her forehead. Prax felt odd watching himself speak. He had seen plenty of recordings of himself, but the man on the screen was thinner than he'd expected. Older. His voice was higher than the one he heard in his own ears, and less hesitant. The Praxidiki Mung, who was about to be broadcast out to the whole of humanity, was a different man than he was. But it was close enough. And if it helped to find May, it would do. If it brought her back, he'd be anyone. Alex slid his fingers across his controls, rearranging the presentation, connecting the images of May to the timeline to Holden. They had set up an account with a belt-based credit union that had a suite of options for short-term unincorporated nonprofit concerns so that any contributions could be accepted automatically. Prax watched, wanting badly to offer comment or to take control, but there was nothing more to do.
All right, Alex said. That's about as pretty as I can make it.
Okay, then, Prax said. What do we do with it now?
Alex looked over. He seemed tired, but there was also an excitement.
Hit send.
But the review process?
There is no review process, Doc. This isn't a government thing. Hell, it's not even a business. It's just us monkeys flying fast and trying to keep our butts out of the engine plume.
Oh, Prax said. Really?
You hang around the captain long enough, you get used to it. You might want to take a day, though. Think it through.
Prax lifted himself on one elbow. Think what through?
sending this out. If it works the way we're thinking, you're about to get a lot of attention. Maybe it'll be what we're hoping for. Maybe it'll be something else. All I'm saying is you can't unscramble that egg.
Prax considered for a few seconds. The screens glowed.
It's May, Prax said.
All right then, Alex said and shifted communication control to the co-pilot station. You want to do the honors?
Where is it going? I mean, where are we sending it?
Simple broadcast, Alex said. Probably get picked up by some local feeds in the belt. But it's the captain, so folks will watch it. Pass it around on the net, and...
And?
We didn't put our hitchhiker in, but the filament out of that glass case. We're kind of announcing that the protomolecule's still out there. That's gonna boost the signal.
And we think that's going to help?
First time we did something like this, it started a war, Alex said. Help might be a strong word for it. Stirs things up, though.
Prax shrugged and hit send.
Torpedoes away, Alex said, chuckling.
Prax slept on the station, serenaded by the hum of the air recyclers. Amos was gone again, leaving only a note that Prax shouldn't wait up. It was probably his imagination that made the spin gravity seem to feel different. With a diameter as wide as Tycho's, the Coriolis effect shouldn't have been uncomfortably noticeable, and certainly not when he lay there, motionless, in the darkness of his room. And still, he couldn't get comfortable. He couldn't forget that he was being turned, inertia pressing him against the thin mattress as his body tried to fly out into the void. Most of the time he'd been on the Rocinante, he'd been able to trick his mind into thinking that he had the reassuring mass of a moon under him. It wasn't, he decided, an artifact of how the acceleration was generated, so much as what it meant. As his mind slowly spiraled down, bits of his self breaking apart like a meteor hitting atmosphere, he felt a massive welling up of gratitude. Part of it was to Holden, and part to Amos. The whole crew of the Rocinante. Half-dreaming, he was on Ganymede again. He was starving, walking down ice corridors with the certainty that somewhere nearby one of his soybeans had been infected with the protomolecule and was tracking him, bent on revenge. With the broken logic of dreams, he was also on Tycho, looking for work. But all the people he gave his CV to shook their heads and told him he was missing some sort of degree or credential he didn't recognize or understand. The only thing that made it bearable was a deeper knowledge, certain as bone, that none of it was true. That he was sleeping, and that when he woke, he would be somewhere safe. What did wake him at last was the rich smell of beef. His eyes were crusted like he'd been crying in his sleep, the tears leaving salt residues where they'd evaporated. The shower was hissing and splashing. Prax pulled on his jumpsuit, wondering again why it had Tachi printed across the back. Breakfast waited on the table. Steak and eggs, flour tortillas, and black coffee. Real food that had cost someone a small fortune. There were two plates, so Prax chose one and started eating. It had probably cost a tenth of the money he had from Nicola, but it tasted wonderful. Amos ducked out of the shower, a towel wrapped around his hips. A massive white scar puckered the right side of his abdomen, pulling his navel off-center, and a nearly photographic tattoo of a young woman with wavy hair and almond-shaped eyes covered his heart. Prax thought there was a word under the tattooed face, but he didn't want to stare.
"Hey, Doc," Amos said. "You're looking better."
"I got some rest," Prax said as Amos walked into his own room and closed the door behind him. When Prax spoke again, he raised his voice. "I want to thank you. I was feeling low last night, and whether you and the others can actually help find May or not..."
"Why wouldn't we be able to find her?"
Amos asked, his voice muffled by the door.
"You ain't losing respect for me, are you, Doc?"
"No," Prax said. "No, not at all. I only meant that what you and the captain are offering is... It's huge. Amos came back out, grinning. His jumpsuit covered scars and tattoos as if they'd never been.
I knew what you meant. I was just joshing you. You like that steak? Keep wondering where they put the cows on this thing, don't you?
Oh no, this is vat-grown. You can tell from the way the muscle fibers grow. You see how these parts right here are layered? Actually, it makes it easier to get a good marbled cut than when you carve it out of a steer.
No shit, Amos said, sitting across from him. I didn't know that.
Microgravity also makes fish more nutritious, Prax said around a mouthful of egg. Increases the oil production. No one knows why, but there are a couple of very interesting studies about it. They think it may not be the low G itself so much as the constant flow you have so that the animals don't stop swimming, make a bubble of oxygen-depleted water, and suffocate. Amos ripped a bit of tortilla and dipped it into the yolk.
This is what dinner conversation's like in your family, ain't it?
Prax blinked.
Mostly, yes. Why? What do you talk about?
Amos chuckled. He seemed to be in a very good mood. There was a relaxed look about his shoulders, and something in the set of his jaw had changed. Prax remembered the previous night's conversation with the captain.
You got laid, didn't you?
Oh, hell yes, Amos said. But that's not the best part.
It's not?
Oh, it's a fucking good part, but there's nothing better in the world than getting a job the day after your ass gets canned.
A pang of confusion touched Prax. Amos pulled his hand terminal out of his pocket, tapped it twice, and slid it across the table. The screen showed a red security border, and the name of the credit union Alex had been working with the night before. When he saw the balance, his eyes went wide. Is that?
That's enough to keep the Rosie flying for a month, and we got it in 7 hours, Amos said. You just tied yourself a team, Doc.
I don't know, really?
Not just that. Take a look at the messages you've got coming in. Captain made a pretty big splash back in the day, but your kiddo? All that shit that came down on Ganymede just got itself a face, and it's her.
Prax pulled up his own terminal. The mailbox associated with the presentation had over 500 video messages and thousands of texts. He began going through them. Men and women he didn't know, some of them in tears, offered up their prayers and anger and support. A belter with a wild mane of gray-black hair gibbered in patois so thick Prax could barely make it out. As near as he could tell, the man was offering to kill someone for him. Half an hour later, Prax's eggs had congealed. A woman from Ceres told him that she'd lost her daughter in a divorce and that she was sending him her month's chewing tobacco money. A group of food engineers on Luna had passed the hat and sent along what would have been a month's salary if Prax had still been a botanist. An old Martian man with skin the color of chocolate and powdered sugar hair gazed seriously into a camera halfway across the solar system and said he was with Prax. When the next message began, it looked just like the others before it. The man in the image was older, 80, maybe 90. With a fringe of white hair clinging to the back of his skull and a craggy face. There was something about his expression that caught Prax's attention. A hesitance. Dr. Mung, the man said. He had a slushy accent that reminded Prax of recordings of his own grandfather.
I'm very sorry to hear of all you and your family have suffered. Are suffering.
The man licked his lips.
The security video on your presentation. I believe I know the man in it. But his name isn't Strickland.
Chapter 34. Holden. According to the station directory, the Blauer Blum was famous for two things. A drink called the Blue Meanie, and its large number of Golgo tables. The guidebook warned potential patrons that the station allowed the bar to serve only two Blue Meanies to each customer, due to the drink's fairly suicidal mixture of ethanol, caffeine, and methylphenidate, and, Holden guessed, some kind of blue food coloring. As he walked through the corridors of Tycho's leisure section, the guidebook began explaining the rules of Golgo to him. After a few moments of utter confusion, goals are said to be borrowed when the defense deflects the drive, he shut it off. There was very little chance he was going to be playing games. And a drink that removed your inhibitions and left you wired and full of energy would be redundant right now. The truth was, Holden had never felt better in his life. He'd messed a lot of things up over the last year. He'd driven his crew away from him. He'd aligned himself with a side he wasn't sure he agreed with in exchange for safety. He might have ruined the one healthy relationship he'd had in his life. He'd been driven by his fear to become someone else. Someone who handled fear by turning it into violence. Someone who Naomi didn't love. Who his crew didn't respect. Who he himself didn't like much. The fear wasn't gone. It was still there, making his scalp crawl every time he thought about Ganymede and about what might be loose and growing there right now. But for the first time in a long time, he was aware of it and wasn't hiding from it. He had given himself permission to be afraid. It made all the difference. Holden heard the blauer bloom several seconds before he saw it. It began as a barely audible rhythmic thumping, which gradually increased in volume and picked up an electronic wail and a woman's voice singing in mixed Hindi and Russian. By the time he reached the club's front door, the song had changed to two men in an alternating chant that sounded like an argument set to music. The electronic wail was replaced by angry guitars. The bass line changed not at all. Inside, the club was an all-out assault on the senses. A massive dance floor dominated the center space, and the dozens of bodies writhing on it were bathed in a constantly changing light show that shifted and flashed in time to the music. The music had been loud out in the corridor, but inside it became deafening. A long chrome bar was set against one wall, and half a dozen bartenders were frantically filling drink orders. A sign on the back wall read, Golgo, and had an arrow pointing down a long hallway. Holden followed it, the music fading with each step so that by the time he reached the back room with the game tables, it was back to being muted bass lines. Naomi was at one of the tables with her friend Sam, the engineer, and a cluster of other belters. Her hair was pulled back with a red elastic band wide enough to be decorative. She'd switched out her jumpsuit for a pair of gray tailored slacks he hadn't known she owned, and a yellow blouse that made her caramel-colored skin seem darker. Holden had to stop for a moment. She smiled at someone who wasn't him, and his chest went tight. As he approached, Sam threw a small metal ball at the table. The group at the other end reacted with sudden, violent movements. He couldn't see exactly what was happening from where he stood, but the slumped shoulders and half-hearted curses coming from the second group led Holden to believe that Sam had done something good for her team. Sam spun around and threw up her hand. The group at her end of the table, which included Naomi, took turns slapping her palm. Sam saw him first and said something he couldn't hear. Naomi turned around and gave him a speculative look that stopped him in his tracks. She didn't smile, and she didn't frown. He raised his palms in what he hoped was an I-didn't-come-to-fight gesture. For a moment, they stood facing each other across the noisy room. Jesus, he thought.